Hello and welcome to the third episode of the English Xbox Mojo version. My name is Thomas, and what has happened in the last few weeks? 20 years of Xbox, the release of Forza Horizon 5 and Halo Infinite Multiplayer, 2 years birthday of the German Xbox Mojo edition, and the start of the English version. Actually, I also planned episodes with guests, but they cancelled at short notice. Then I wanted to do an episode for the release of Halo Infinite and thought that I could take the Game Awards with me then. It's a shame that it didn't work out with the guests, but it is also difficult to organize the appointments before Christmas. For me, Halo Infinite is one of the biggest surprises of the year, and I mean that positively. The game went through development hell several times, was postponed for a year, and I feared a disaster in the meantime. Instead, 343 served us the highest rated first-person shooter of the year. It should mean something if I'm a multiplayer crouch and play Halo Infinite online for over 35 hours. The gameplay is just so great. The significantly longer time to kill than Battlefield or Call of Duty suits my taste exactly. One against one duels can also be won if you haven't landed the first hit. In addition, the maps are extremely well designed. Aquarius is a symmetrical arena map that brings the classic Halo feeling. Whatever Slayer or Capture the Flag, I really like this map. I also feel satisfaction playing at Bazaar, a street market in New Mombasa. The map I like the least is likely to be Launch Site. After all these weeks, I find this map with the space missile too confusing, big and winding. Maybe I just like clearer and simply structured maps like Behemoth, also a symmetrical one. The building in the middle of the map with a few ramps and vehicles all around is all my taste. I like all big team battle maps, although Fragmentation is my favorite one because it best conveys the Halo feel. For me, big team battle is the right mix of big enough for chaos but not too big. Battlefield 2042, for example, is way too big with way too many players. You jog around for a long time, get killed thanks to the low time to kill, and then have to walk a lot again. I also played the trial version of Battlefield 2042 for 10 hours or so. As much as I liked the progression system, the gameplay loop was often lengthy and tedious. With Halo, I had more action on the one hand. On the other hand, I had the opportunity to make a good contribution as a beginner. I found Halo to be much more beginner-friendly. The progression system was my main criticism of Halo multiplayer for a long time, and I didn't think leveling via challenges was so wrong. That's how I got to know the weapons and everything, precisely because I needed X skills with weapon Y or something like that. But that at first you only got to XP through challenges was annoying as hell and harsh. It is now the case that the first 6 games of the day deliver the following experience points. First match, 300 XP. Second match, 200 XP. Third match, 200 XP. And the fourth, fifth, and sixth matches, 100 XP each. All further matches bring 50 XP each. So if you only play 6 games a day and don't solve any challenges, you would get 1000 experience points, which is precisely one level in the Battle Pass. Since this change, the 100 levels you can reach in a Battle Pass are no longer utopian and grinding, especially since everything goes faster thanks to the challenges. Still, I like to have XP for winning, so that there is another bonus. Rewards for good play are what 343 is currently thinking about, but this would be more of a long-term change. I wouldn't be surprised if the first season was played mainly to the end with the current system. The Battle Pass itself should also be adapted, where There are currently too few cosmetics and too many filler items, such as XP boost or challenge changes. Another point of criticism for me was that far from the big team battle and ranked, there is almost only the random game. No possibility to only play Capture the Flag, Oddball or Slayer. It is incredibly frustrating when you have a challenge that requires a specific game mode. This week there has been a slight softening in this regard as more playlists have been released early on. Slayer, Fiesta, Free for All and Tactical Slayer. Definitely a step in the right direction. In Free for All I had a great experience right away. I was last until 1 minute before the end and somehow nothing went straight. Had 2 kills back and had already given up on the round. With nothing to lose, I stormed the market square in Bazaar with my pistol, dusted off 1 kill, did the next one with close combat and then a couple of targeted head hits. In the end, I got a massacre plus 2 or 3 more kills in this short time, so the game went into overtime. This went badly for me again until I had 23 kills and, well, around 10 till 15 seconds left before the end, and the leader had 24 kills. At 25 games, the game will be over, and then 2 characters ran into me and I killed both and won the game. It felt so good because it was so unexpected. Very, very excellent Halo experience for me. I can't praise the gameplay highly enough. Every weapon feels good, the controls are perfection, the arenas look good, and all that in a stable 60 FPS or even 120 FPS. The first multiplayer season will last until May. I think that I can now manage the 100 levels of the Battle Pass relatively easily by then. I am currently level 30 and I will see how long this concept will inspire me. I think 6 months is a bit too long for the first season and that new maps have to be available from season 2 at the latest. In the meantime, I have also been able to play the campaign and it was impressive. Gameplay is a 10 out of 10, just what the grappling hook enables and how much it allows travel in the half-open world is great. Thanks to grappling hooks, I am constantly climbing buildings or mountains to see if there is any collectible item hidden there. I kind of play it like Breath of the Wild, if you will. But that also means that I'm not moving as fast as I would like. I just still need to find every audio log, weapon cabinet, level up or skull in every area. I like the switch between the open world and more closed story levels. I find that the story, without spoiling it, is told very well. Definitely the best Free for Free Industries campaign, and the Halo spirit captured perfectly. Because of the half-open world, I would have only wished for more variety. It's fantastic that the map isn't as full of icons as it is in Ubisoft games. I also like that the map as such is significantly smaller than today's Assassin's Creed or Far Cry. I even stopped Far Cry 6 because I felt almost overwhelmed by the size and tasks, and in the end you always do the same thing. In a sense, this repetitive style of play is the same in Halo, but not quite as extreme. Especially since most of the side tasks fit the Master Chief, you are not asked to pick some flowers at once or something like that. Here, Marines are rescued, outposts conquered, or enemy base destroyed. Since the gameplay is so absolutely mature and fluid, I still enjoyed it more. Also, because I always try different routes, do I take a vehicle and which one? Which weapon do I take with me? And something like, and questions like that. It's strong how much Free for Free modernized the Halo formula with maintaining the familiar feel of the series. The overall package is solid and, in the case of Infinite, just the beginning. An excellent basis for improving our multiplayer over the next few years and for delivering new, more Riot campaign content. I didn't have this complete package in any other game this year, which is why Halo Infinite is definitely in the competition for Game of the Year. Unfortunately, the game appeared too late for the Game Awards because Jeff Keighley somehow thinks he will award the award at the beginning of December and the submissions of the games will happen in mid-November. Nevertheless, I watched the marketing event and even did it live. The latter wasn't planned, but I couldn't sleep and then I watched the show to fall asleep and it kept me waking up. Well, just watch the Game Awards until 4 or 5 a.m. in the morning to be utterly overtired for the rest of the day. The problem is that the Game Awards are way too long. You have to endure around 4 hours and everything can be accommodated in 90 minutes, so there are constant commercial breaks, felt more breaks than at the NFL. What did I get stuck with from the Game Awards? It's definitely a marketing-only event where the awards are just an... annoying appendage. Awards are given almost during the commercial breaks or the winners are simply announced without having the chance to accept the awards on stage and give a short speech. Speaking of speech, these are limited to 30 seconds, even with the GOTY winner. Advertising that lasts for minutes and badly bought advertising trailers, no problem, but the winners have to be ready in 30 seconds and quickly disappear from the stage. But who won? At first, all of the esports categories were due to lack of my knowledge. I just name the winners. Best esports event 2021 League of Legends World Championship. Best esports coach Kim Kooma Joong Gun. Sorry, I pronounced this name wrong, I think. Best esports team, Natus Winter, Counter-Strike Global Offensive. Best esports athlete, Alexander Simple Kostliev. Best esports game, League of Legends. Best content creator of the year, Dream. So, that were all the esports content. Most anticipated game, for the second time in a row, Elden Ring won this category. Otherwise, the usual suspects were nominated with Horizon Forbidden West, God of War Ragnarok, Breath of the Wild 2, and Starfield. If all of these games really come out in 2022, it will be a very, very strong year for games. The two awards, Best Debut Indie and Best Indie, won Kena, Bridge of Spirits from Emberlab. I played through it with joy on PS5, a lovely old-school action-adventure that would have fit well with the PS2 or GameCube generation. Visually, also very appealing, and the combat system and the degree of difficulty in boss fights are much crisper than you would expect. Best Multiplayer. It Takes Two, and that makes sense. After all, it is a co-op game, which allows for a unique gaming experience. And as much as I like games like Back 4 Blood or recognize how famous Knockout City or Valheim seem, the winner definitely suits me. Just as it makes sense that It Takes Two was also awarded for Best Family Game, co-op fun, magical world, and very varied levels. It is simply stronger than the other nominees such as Mario Party Superstars, New Pokemon Snap, WarioWare Get It Together, or Super Mario 3D World and Bowser's Fury. Even if I have to say that you should definitely have played Bowser's Fury. It's really a positive surprise for me, and thanks to the open world approach, it totally enhances 3D World. I really enjoyed the few hours of Bowser's Fury. Best sports or racing, it was fully deserved for Forza Horizon 5. The other nominees were F1 2022, FIFA 2020, Hot Wheels Unleashed, and Riders Republic. But that wasn't the only award for Forza Horizon, as the game also won Innovation in Accessibility and Best Audio Design. The latter surprised me, as I would have rated other nominees like Returnal and Deathloop much more in this regard. Best Sim or Strategy went to Age of Empires 4. Together with Relic Entertainment, The World's Edge breathed new life into this odd real-time strategy series. The game even had the best launch in the series, and I would love to play it, but I don't have a PC, and unfortunately, it doesn't work with cloud gaming on a Mac yet. The other nominees were Microsoft Flight Simulator, Inscription, Humankind, and Evil Genius 2. You can play Evil Genius 2 on your Xbox console via Game Pass. Best Fighting became Guilty Gear Strive, which was also the best new beat-em-up of the year. Unfortunately, console exclusive for PlayStation 5. Best Role-Playing is a category that is very close to my heart. I still find the nomination of Cyberpunk 2077. I still find the nomination of Cyberpunk 2077 to be a cheek due to the whole drama about the lousy console versions. Months the game wasn't on PSN and everything. I played Monster Hunter Rise with joy and would be happy if Capcom should bring this game in 4K for Xbox or PlayStation. Thanks to the mounts or the grappling hook function, the gameplay has been modernized very well. I really like Scarlet Nexus, but I got stuck because of other games. Shin Megami Tensei 5 interests me, but it almost looks like a PS2 game on Switch, and I don't know if the Shin Megami series is too hardcore for me. As a result, I would have voted Tales of Arise for RPG of the Year from the nominees. I won't find time to end this game this year, but I like everything I saw and alluded to. Probably the best Tales of games in a decade or so. For many, it should now be the perfect Christmas game which you could play well on vacation. Best Action-Adventure, the victory of Metroid Red was well deserved. Best Switch game of the year and a good modernization of the classic formula without ignoring the roots. Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, Psychonauts 2, Ratchet & Clank, and Resident Evil Village were also nominated. Best Action Game was fully deserved Returnal. I've put so many hours into this game. Gameplay, optics, atmosphere and sound excellent. Best Sony game this year, and hopefully one day I will platinum it. The other nominees were Back 4 Blood, Kyberly 2, Deathloop and Far Cry 6. As much as I liked Deathloop, I didn't understand the Far Cry nomination that much. It looks good, it's way too big, and it's just another Far Cry. I felt almost overwhelmed while playing because of the mass of tasks and the size of the map. So quickly I stopped. Best VR or AR was Resident Evil 4. You see, I didn't even notice that you can now play the game in VR. I love Resident Evil 4, and maybe one day I'll be able to play the VR excursion, possibly in a year if PSVR 2 really comes out. The best community support and best ongoing prizes went to Final Fantasy XIV Online. Completely understandable since this game is currently on its way. The new DLC was just released and the servers were so overloaded that Square Enix even stopped selling at short notice. It's a shame that Square and Xbox could never agree on implementation, even though 2 years ago it looked like an Xbox version was being worked on. I don't understand why Sea of Thieves wasn't nominated for Best Ongoing Game. We experienced the best year of the game, very successful seasons with good playful expansion and the Pirates of the Caribbean expansion in the summer. Best Mobile Game is a category that doesn't interest me. Still, I'd like to mention that Genshin Impact and Fantasian, League of Legends, Wild Rift, Marvel Future Revolution and Pokemon Unite were nominated. Fantasian is a classic JRPG from Mistwalker. The producer is the Final Fantasy inventor Hironobu Sakaguchi. And the soundtrack is from the former Final Fantasy composer Nobuo Uematsu. And yeah, Genshin Impact won this award. Games for Impact is a category that honors tough-provoking games or has a pro-social meaning. Before Your Eyes, Boyfriend Dungeon, Chicory, No Longer Home, and Life is Strange True Colors were nominated. I only played Life is Strange and talked about it in the German podcast, and that game also won the award. I found Best Performance interesting because I always fear it also has advantages if a Hollywood actor is nominated. In this case, Giancarlo Esposito as Anton Castillo in Far Cry 6. Really great in the game Deathloop, where Jason Keighley as Colt Wan and Utsumo Akaga as Juliana Blake, who had terrific dialogues. The banter between the two was just excellent. In Life is Strange True Colors, Erica Mori as Alex Chen delivered an equally good performance. But Maggie Robertson won for her role as Lady Dimitrescu from Resident Evil Village. A brief appearance in a game drove Mrs. Robertson's career because that was her first role in a video game. And in the acceptance speech, she said how much the game has changed her life for the better. Best score and music went to Nier Replicant version 1.22474487 run 3 9, whoever came up with this name. I was also surprised that the award went to a remake, and I would have understand Deathloop as the winner, just like Guardians of the Galaxy and, of course, The Artful Escape. The latter is a music game and the maker is a musician himself, and it's all about music and everything, and so this would be a good fit also. Best art direction went to Deathloop. I understand that the game is simply stylish, but I would have loved to see Psychonauts 2 as the winner, as it feels like a playable Tim Burton movie. Otherwise, The Artful Escape, Kena, and Ratchet & Clank were nominated. By the way, it shouldn't remain Deathloop's only award, as it's also won Best Game Direction. Again, I could have imagined Psychonauts 2, Returnal, or It Takes Two as potential winners. Best Narrative went to Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, and it was a surprise to me. It's such a game that went a little under the radar, but got good ratings. But the character's charm should be pretty perfect, and I just have to keep playing it. I'm only in mission 2 or 3. Nevertheless, I would have wished for Psychonauts 2 here, because topics like depression or alcoholism are addressed here without making anything ridiculous. Pixar couldn't do anything better in their films than what Tim Schafer and Double Fine delivered here. Halo Infinite won the Player's Voice Award, and I was pleased about that, because this prize is only chosen by players, and the community showed such support for Halo, and it was just outstanding. After all, such awards should cover the entire game year and not just the games up to November. But let's get to the big prize, Game of the Year. The nominees were Deathloop, It Takes Two, Metroid Dread, Psychonauts 2, Ratchet & Clank, Rift Apart, and Resident Evil Village. I still wonder why Resident Evil was nominated. I liked it a lot, but it didn't have any significant innovations or playful highlights. just a good solid sequel. I also don't understand the nomination of Ratchet & Clank. Good sequel on a technically high level, playful, but just another Ratchet. And to be honest, every Ratchet in the last 19 years was technically top at the time and still never close to a game of the year. I would have nominated Returnal much sooner as a PS5 game because it had fresh new ideas. But the winner was It Takes Two, and I was delighted with how happy Joseph Fares was about the win. Beautiful human moment. I can understand the success as the game had creative level design and lots of fresh ideas. In the absence of a co-op partner interested in the game, I could only play 3, 4, maybe 5 levels, and they didn't pick me up as much as I had hoped. Without spoiling it, Xbox Mojo will vote for a different game of the year. And just because I would have preferred Psychonauts 2 among the nominees here, and I think it's a shame that the game didn't win an award, doesn't automatically make it Xbox Mojo Game of the Year. I still have a few more games to make up for to deal with this topic in a later episode. So, moving on to the trailers and new announcement, I think Keely overhyped them a bit again. He spoke of 4 or 5 trailers at the level of the Elden Ring gameplay reveal at the time, and I didn't see that. Although I liked the show in terms of these new announcements. Even if I was surprised that Sony and Nintendo didn't have anything with them. Okay, Sony had brought a new trailer for Horizon Forbidden West, but I don't have to see anything more about the game. It's coming in February. On the other hand, Xbox had shown a real highlight with the gameplay trailer for Senua's Saga Hellblade 2. For the first time, gameplay scenes could be seen for a good amount of 6 minutes, which should have opened mouths due to the sheer, absolute astonishing graphic quality. Anyone who has always wondered whether there will really be a generational leap from Xbox One to Xbox Series X, or whether Series X games are simply one games in 60 FPS 4K, has been taught a better lesson here. In the gameplay, we see Senua walking into a cave with several warriors when a human-like giant appears, missing its legs and can therefore only move around safely by crawling. There follows a fight and at the end a short cliffhanger. Very well implemented everything, realistic animations, lifelike graphics and phenomenal lighting effects. Great. The transition between gameplay and short cutscenes was so smooth that it wasn't noticeable. I think we will have to wait, at least until 2023. But also I was amused by the criticism on social media that the gameplay was too scripted and not enough actual gameplay. On the one hand, I recommend playing Hellblade 1 again, which was primarily an atmospheric walking simulator and ideally suited to the one shown here. And on the other hand, Xbox has always been criticized because the platform has too few exclusive single-player cinematic experience. Now you show exactly that, and now there's a complaint about gameplay. It's mad. Equally visual stunning was The Matrix Awakens, a playable Unreal Engine 5 demo that you could download to your Xbox Series X, S and your PS5 right after the awards. Playfully like a light gun shooter, but optically next gen. Even if the faces in the game itself weren't near as good as in the in-game cutscenes at the beginning. But I found the city, cars and everything very colossal. So if I imagine experiencing GTA 6 in this way, wouldn't it be fantastic? Rocksteady was showing gameplay for Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League. for the first time, and it kind of reminded me of Sunset Overdrive as far as movement is concerned. Very colorful and crazy action spectacle, which is due for release in 2022. My only question after the trailer was, will the whole game be such an action battle, or will there be quiet scenes as well? Star Wars Eclipse was shown as a very atmospheric trailer without gameplay hint. This is probably because this new game from Quantic Dream, the makers of Heavy Rain or Detroit Become Human, will probably not be released until 2024 or 2025. The atmosphere was right, but for me the trailer was also the perfect example of the hypocrisy of the Game Awards. On one hand, Keighley opened the show with a statement that abuse and harassment should not be tolerated in the gaming industry, be it in the gaming companies or online communities. He said that we should build a better and more inclusive future and a safer gaming industry. This is all correct, but why is an announcement from Quantic Dreams being shown? The bad working atmosphere in the studio was already reported in 2017. Misconduct by the bosses, but also racist, homophobic and sexist defamation. It's been like this for years now, and it's just strange that after the opening speech you give such a stage to a studio that doesn't seem to be completely clean in this respect. After all, money is more important than your own integrity. With Star Trek Resurgence, an adventure in the Star Trek universe was shown, which is made by former Telltale Games employees and should appear in spring. We had to wait a long time for a good Star Trek game, which is why I'm now looking forward to the release. Smilegate Entertainment showed a trailer for the first-person shooter Crossfire X, which will be delivered in Europe on the 10th of February. Alan Wake has been announced for 2023, making many Xbox fans happy, this time a multi-platform title, but there are gonna be a sequel to the classic is great news. However, this sequel would be a survival horror game, so take a new direction. Monolith, the makers of the Middle-Earth games, are working on a Wonder Woman game with Sonic Frontiers, a Breath of the Wild style. Sonic will be released at the end of 2022, at least what the landscape and apparently open world suggests. A Black Tales Requiem now looks more like a next-gen, so you can clearly see the visual advances compared to its predecessor. And we saw the first trailer for the Halo TV series, and I was pleasantly surprised at how good everything looked. Apparently, the budget fits here because Master Chief could easily have looked like bad cosplay. The series will be released sometime next year and has already been renewed for another season. Sure, there were trailers for Dying Light 2, Tiny Tina's or Saints Row, but I should have mentioned the most important new announcements. That should have been it for this week. Thank you for listening. I wish all listeners a Merry Christmas. Follow me on Twitter at XboxMojo. The future is bright and the mojo is coming back. Until next time, your Thomas.